I'm your host, Garth Braithwaite, and this is Web Friends. Usually at the beginning of a Web Friends episode, I introduce the guest. Today we're going to try something a little different. Instead of hearing from me, we're going to hear from someone who knows him a bit better.
My name is Melissa Frost. I am a freelance visual designer and illustrator.
Melissa is not our guest on this episode, but she is an awesome designer and illustrator. In fact, she's been working on a really cool project.
I recently just illustrated my first children's book, Walter the Whale with Wings.
So this episode doesn't have much to do with Walter, but it's worth checking out, so I put it in the show notes. Anyway, back to the introduction of our guest. Melissa happens to know our guest very well.
Well, I know him now because he's my husband, of course. But we met in college at James Madison University, and we had a physics class together where he sat next to me every day. And I didn't really notice until we got our first test back, and I was failing, and Brad had like A+ extra credit.
So if you hadn't already figured it out, Brad Frost is our guest today. And not only is he good with physics, turns out he knows how to seize an opportunity when it presents itself.
And he offered to help me out. And we realized that our dorms were right next to each other. And then he was coming over to tutor me all the time. And then he stole me away from my old boyfriend. So
that's their story. But back to introducing Brad.
How would I describe Brad? He is very extroverted. Definitely very energetic. He's funny. I joke around that he's a robot because he just seems to be good at so many different things. Like he just picked up snowboarding really easily. He plays bass. He's like awesome at what he does with web development and design. He can also be a little inappropriate sometimes. Like he'll like take a joke a little bit too far. He'll like cross a line and I'm like, I don't know if that was okay or like how much he swears in his talks.
So far we found out that Brad is an inappropriate robot who happens to be good at everything that he tries. But on top of that, Brad's also a fantastic friend. He actually does a great job of bringing people together.
I don't know how to put it into like one, like a couple words necessarily, but I guess that he is always trying to bring people together. Like he's always wanting to help plan events to bring people together, where either it's like a canoe trip or just having dinner. He's kind of an instigator and he always truly wants to know what's going on in someone's life. He's always like sincerely listening to what you have to say. And then later on, if he comes across something that he sees that will remind him of you, then he'll like, you know, tweet over a link or snap a picture and send it over. And so I guess just like really thoughtful makes him a good friend.
Okay, so that's probably a good enough introduction about Brad.
Yeah, we talked about him enough.
Let's go ahead and jump to the interview after a quick word from our sponsors.
This episode of Web Friends is sponsored by Campaign Monitor. Sending email campaigns doesn't need to be a chore. Campaign Monitor makes it fun, easy, and beautiful. Try your hand at their template builder and have a responsive email template ready in 60 seconds. Campaign Monitor also lets you offer their services to your clients at your prices. And if you need help creating better emails, Campaign Monitor just released a free ebook with their top 100 email campaigns of 2013.
It's also sponsored by Symbolicons. Symbolicons is a family of simple, precise vector icons created by Jory Raphael, who designed the artwork for Good Stuff and its shows. There are 9 different icon sets that have been created with a consistent weight and style to visually match one another. Buy the bundle and get over 2,400 icons all at once. Go to symbolicons.com, use the code GOODSTUFF01, and get 20% off your order. Thanks, Brad, for joining us. So, first question, what is the best advice that you've received, or at least the advice that seems to stick with you over the years?
In thinking about it, I haven't had any really sort of digestible thought nuggets sort of that have stuck with me, except as I was thinking about it more, my grandpa, who is hilarious, he actually does provide a lot of like really genuinely great advice. All my grandparents and my parents and stuff do. But the one liner he had is keep your ears open and your bowels closed. I love that.
That is fantastic. Yeah. I'm excited to tweet that when this episode is over.
Yeah. If Twitter was around, if he learned how to use Twitter, there would be so many things that would be just going crazy all over the place, because he's got a bunch of hilarious jokes and just anecdotes and all sorts of crazy stories and stuff. So yeah.
So would he just like randomly say that sort of thing, or like is there context to when he would hear that?
Yeah, a lot of it's just totally random, which is why I feel like I take after him, maybe even more than both of my parents and stuff, because he's what, 91 now, and he's just as goofy as ever, but just has always been really, really driven and stuff like that, and but yeah, just always a load of fun, and yeah, so. Oftentimes though, there's just total random moments. Like I'm not going to say it, cause it's actually pretty gross. It's like G-rated gross, but maybe not podcast appropriate. I don't know what your audience is like. So.
We won't know until we push it, right? You can try.
Okay. Yeah. So just to sort of give you, you know, a taste of what Gramps is like. My cousins, like I have a bunch of cousins and we're all really tight and stuff. And we are, you know, just at like a family barbecue or whatever and eating food. And Gramps comes up to us and he's like, "What you eating? Fried farts and pickled asshole?" I'm like, "Gramps, that's the grossest thing I've ever heard in my life." So the stuff that comes out of his mouth is pretty hilarious, and sort of as he's gotten older, it's just like the wheels have totally come off, and he's just like totally, he just doesn't care, and so he'll say whatever's on his mind. I love it.
That's great. There's no filter whatsoever. Just
no filter. Yeah,
that's great. With those sort of one-liners, it makes you wonder, like, do those people sit up at night just thinking, "Oh, this is going to be good"?
I don't know. Yeah,
I've got to find a place when I can say this. Ooh, a family barbecue.
But that's just it. I honestly, I don't think that there's any thought. It's just so automatic that there's no way that stuff is premeditated. Like, he's not trying. He's just naturally goofy and jovial and just really sort of personable. And funny thing is, he's a doctor for 50 years, so I think that's sort of where that all comes from. So
that's hilarious. All right, so usually, so
that's good advice.
Usually though, we talk about, after we hear the advice, we talk about how do you apply that? Is there an application of that advice?
I mean, so to sort of take a step back and I mean, like, that's one specific thing, but that's just it. It's like whenever you think about good advice that you're given, and it's hard to sort of wrap that up in a sentence, but I'd say that, you know, my entire family, you know, Gramps being somebody, you know, really close to me in my life, and also my parents, my other grandparents and stuff, they're all just extremely hard workers. And I was, you know, sort of thinking back, growing up in my house, the word bored, or, you know, "I'm bored," was like as bad as saying the F word in my house growing up. You know, like as a kid, if we said "I'm bored," it was like illegal. It was totally out of bounds to sort of say that. And sort of as a result, I think that sort of, you know, doing things and sort of, you know, always sort of applying yourself to something or just doing something has always been instilled in me. And, you know, again, back to my grandpa, I mean, like, up until he broke his femur like 2 years ago, he's like in his workshop every day. He's always out on the tractor. He's always building something or woodworking. It's crazy. And My mom's definitely the same way. She has an insane amount of energy and is always sort of doing something. And I think that that's, you know, as far as like advice and just sort of like seeing by example in my family, you know, people, you know, applying themselves and doing things and trying to make things happen and, you know, being creative and sort of making things that weren't there before, and, you know, caring about, you know, the people around you and stuff like that, making things happen for them. That to me, you know, there, again, it's not like a one liner, like that, but that sort of applying yourself and sort of caring about, you know, those that are around you is definitely baked into me.
That's an interesting concept. I mean, especially in the respect to community involvement, you are involved in speaking and doing things with the community as part of the web development, web design community. But when you started, I'm assuming that a lot of people kind of see these things as luck, right? Like you see some new people who come into the community who suddenly seem to be speaking at a lot of conferences or that seem to be getting some attention and you're like, wow, they're really lucky. Sometimes we have that impulse, but it's not like the stuff that you do. When I see like this is responsive, there's a lot of work into the projects that you work on. How much work does it take you to be involved in the community?
If you see it as work, if you see it as sure, it's an effort, but you know, right. It's the trick is to make it something that you enjoy and contribute to things that you enjoy. And then that sort of that effort doesn't feel like work. But yeah, I mean, like for something like this is responsive, what I've sort of taught myself in sort of using this, my workflow for that is I see somebody, you know, write a great post or something gets released or whatever. And I just try to set up my workflow so that it's really easy for me to throw it on the pile and then move on with my day. And I have quite a few projects like that, things that I sort of just generally chip away at. And I'm crazy when it comes to multitasking and sort of, you know, borderline ADD, as far as that goes, not like in the sort of bad sense of the word, but like I bounce around like a pinball. And I like that. I sort of like having a bunch of different projects and stuff going on, things to be involved in and sort of, you know, move the bar, a little on one thing, you know, for part of the day, move the bar on another thing, you know, for the rest of the day or whatever. And to be able to sort of contribute to these community projects and to be able to blog and to be able to sort of hang out on Twitter and, you know, answer the questions that come through there or whatever. It's a lot of work, but it's, and I will say that, yeah, absolutely. Like luck plays into like that sort of visibility, but really at the end of the day, yeah, there's a lot of work that goes into anything. I mean, you see that we watched the Grammys last year and that band Fun, that was like all over the radio for a while. Yeah. They won Best New Artist and they got on stage and they're like, we've been a band for close to 15 years. It's like, it's really funny to be considered, you know, best new artist. Like, okay, this band that's had a 15-year history, you know, it's finally a new artist, a breaking new, you know, it's like, so that stuff doesn't come out of nowhere. It doesn't just sort of materialize magically and then all of a sudden you're on stage at a bunch of conferences or, you know, you have loads of people, you know, reading your stuff or whatever. It's, you know, there is a lot of work that goes into it.
That's a great example. And I absolutely love them. I love the format a little bit more, which was their band before. It was Nate Roos and Sam Means. And I've actually had him on the show. He started...
no way.
Yeah, so he's had this interesting transition where he went from like literally a rock star, right? To he started a tech company called Hello Merch. And he helps...
indie bands and stuff do merchandising, and it's really
That's
cool.
Funny.
And then we actually, we've been meaning to get Brandon Campbell on from Neon Trees. He went the other way. He worked doing web development and web design, and now he's the bass player for Neon Trees. So yeah, we've been meaning to do like a musician episode. I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, I think that's really well put. It's not like you woke up one day after you made a website and your inbox was filled with, hey, come speak at our conference invitations.
Right. Right.
They're, and I like the way that you said it's effort more than it is work. If it's work, it's not sustainable.
Right. Absolutely.
You're not getting paid for it. It's really hard to see the direct return on investment, though you can feel it. Sometimes it's hard to prove it.
Right. And that's just something, and I know that you care a lot about sort of putting things out there and all like the open design stuff and us too. And if you think about, back whenever I used to work at an agency, but even Melissa, saying, you know, you're on Twitter for like 3 hours at least a day, just on and off, you know, just sort of checking in on things. And it's like, if you look at that from a, we'll say a billable hours standpoint, that's like the worst thing you could do. Right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, spending the time to be engaged in the community, to, you know, stay up late writing that blog post or write that little sort of script or, you know, make that new GitHub repository or whatever it is that you're doing. I mean, even though that's stuff that doesn't, you know, 2 weeks later appear in your bank, you know, account.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that's just tremendously valuable. And that's ultimately what will get those people in touch with you that are hopefully interested in whatever you're doing and would be willing to pay you to, you know, do work for them or talk to them or anything like that.
Yeah. And those are the projects that when I look back, because there's times when you need to feel like you're making progress, that life feels like it's getting a little bit repetitive. And I look back on the projects that probably didn't pay any money, but those are the ones that help me to feel like I'm actually accomplishing things.
Yeah,
more so than client work.
Right. And it's a lot of ways. I mean, you need to have those side projects in order to sort of deflect the frustration of work with a capital W. I mean, you know, sometimes you get stuck, and that's why me personally is sort of going back to why I love multitasking so much. If I'm just not feeling a particular project, I'll move on to one of the 800 other projects I have going on and make progress there. Like I rarely have a day where I'm just totally flat out like I don't feel inspired at all, or I don't feel like I could do anything. I'm just going to stay in bed. I mean, that's just not an option. But at the same time, like I at any given time, I'll have 3 or 4 major, sort of really major projects, but then just a whole handful of sort of things on the side that I'm just constantly trying to move along.
So we were talking before we started the recording. Well, before we started the interview, we were talking a little bit about how you're making this foray into product development. Is that how some of this product work started? Did it start off as something that you just were kicking around, or were it's one of your multitasking projects that you've got on the back burner?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like most people, you have a million ideas, and most of them die on the vine. Or, you know, it's always those, wouldn't it be cool if,
yeah,
finish the sentence. And then it's like, yeah, that would be. And then you move on with your life, you know. With the people I'm working on this with, it was, wouldn't it be cool if this? And I got an email from them. We were in Germany at the time, and we got back to the States, and I got an email from them. And I was like, hey, we were thinking about that. Wouldn't it be cool if that's actually a good idea? We should do something with that. And so that's what sort of, you know, sparked the interest in actually sort of, you know, actually going ahead and trying to build something, to create something. So
that's interesting. So your partners, I'll say partners, I'm not sure if I'm a fan of that word, your friends that you're working on the project with,
yeah,
they kind of helped you turn what was just, hey, that's a cool idea, into maybe we should put time and effort into this idea.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And sometimes it's really funny too. I mean, like, sometimes there are things that sort of happen sort of randomly like that. But again, like, if the idea is gelling, or if you sort of kick something around a little bit or build out a prototype of something, or just had an idea and set up the Tumblr, and sort of what I've learned in sort of having a lot of ideas or getting excited about something, you, at that moment where like the lightning bolt strikes, you try to get it as far along as humanly possible before your other obligations sort of pull you back away from it. Because then what ends up happening, and I've had this happen like tons of times, like WTF Mobile Web, for example, which is a Tumblr I run with Jen Simmons. And I was collecting all of these screenshots of these sort of crappy mobile web experiences, right? You know, yeah, the ones that sort of trying to kick you over to the app, or, you know, try to, you know, have an overlay and there's no way to get over to the X button and all of that. So just all sorts of those sort of bad experiences. And I've been sort of kicking that around. I actually had the domain name WTF Mobile Web and all of this stuff, just like in an aha moment, I sort of, you know, spent some time to sort of put all those together. And then, as it turns out, I was talking to Jen, and she had her own sort of collection of these screenshots. And so because I already sort of had the infrastructure in place, all we really needed to do is spend a night or two sort of just, you know, populating this Tumblr with all these posts. And then next thing you know, it was a thing. Yeah. Same thing with WTF QR codes. I sort of had this along. And then Craig Villamore, who's out in California, I sort of got in touch with him and I was like, hey, you know, you sort of have these same sort of critical sort of things going on. Do you want to do this with me? And so I've sort of found that, like, if I'm able to sort of have some basic infrastructure, like the seed to an idea, a domain name bought, a database set up, a whatever, just something, try to move that along as far as I can before life gets in the way and pulls you away from your pet project. What ends up happening is that you just have like lots of potential things, and then it might just take talking to the right person to actually sort of kick one of those into the you know, the next level.
So that, I really like that idea of talking to the right people, because there are so many ideas that come to us that sometimes it's hard to figure out, well, what actually is worth putting time and effort into.
Yeah, and so absolutely,
these other people can sometimes help turn that idea into, or at least motivate you.
Well, that's just it. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, whenever people try to lose weight by themselves or quit smoking or anything like that, it's tough to go it alone a lot of times. And sometimes you need, you know, somebody else there that, one, all of a sudden now you're sort of responsible to them, to sort of, you know, produce something or whatever. Yeah. But two, it just, yeah, it gives you someone to bounce ideas off of to say, you know, okay, well, I'm going to do this and you do that and cool. And just sort of move on from there. Yeah. So it's a lot more fun, to work on something with somebody else who is interested in the thing. And that's, I think, the trick. I started writing a couple blog posts about sort of form stuff like a month or two ago. And just automatically I got swarmed by like the folks at the Filament Group and Aaron Gustafson and all these other people who, you know, spent a lot of time talking about form design and accessibility and stuff like that. And it was just really cool to sort of have a seed of an idea where it's like, ah, well, you know, maybe we could do something like this. And then you throw it out there, and then just immediately interested parties come in and make it better. And I just think that that's so cool, which is why I love sharing things so much, even if they are like incomplete ideas or just like something that's just the beginning of something.
Yeah.
Because as soon as it's out there, then you have an entire community of people that could either take that idea and run with it or help you run with it, or if it's not a good idea, then it won't go anywhere. And that's that's fine. Yeah.
So how do you find these people then? Obviously, I mean, where you are now with the amount of time that you spend in speaking at conferences and in projects that are like this as responsive, you have a pretty wide network of people that you're in contact with. But how do you recommend someone kind of go about doing that if they've got these ideas, and some ideas do better with partners or friends or whatever you want to call them? How would you recommend going about it?
I mean, Twitter's great. Twitter's great, but even if you're, you know, even if you're like just getting started in Twitter or something like that, or just even entering the career, just sort of becoming familiar with who's out there and whose work you respect. And for example, you know, if there's something performance related to web design, I know the five people that I will ping, you know, if I'm stuck on something, or if I'm sort of designing something else, you know, I'll go to these people. And just sort of knowing, you know, who I respect in their particular niches, to sort of ping. So this happens to be a lot. I mean, at least on Twitter, where it's like, hey, you know, I know you talk a lot about, you know, this stuff or death to bullshit or whatever, and like, here's the screenshot of this crappy experience, or oh, here's this, or, you know, or I wrote this post, you know, about this, and I know that you have talked about this in the past. So I just sort of wanted to give you a heads up that I happened to write about this thing. What do you think? And a lot of the people who speak at these conferences and stuff like that are also very community minded.
Yeah.
And are willing to sort of pass things around or share it if it's cool or whatever. So getting started in doing that, I guess just sort of ping people you think would be interested in it, people whose work you respect and stuff like that, and sort of see where it goes. But yeah, I mean, just generally speaking, like sort of find your tribe, find your community, find whatever it is that interests you, and you know, the other people that are interested in the same thing will typically be willing to lend a helping hand to sort of get something off the ground or something.
Okay. So I'm going to ask now on the flip side of that. So there are times where there are new people who have ideas, mm-hmm. and who are looking to enter into the community, they're looking to get more involved, and they ping the right sort of people. What happens if you're an experienced person who's been in the community for a while and you're getting pinged by somebody that you're really not interested in that idea, or you're not sure, it's just not something that you're passionate about or that you find much interest in? How do you help that person without being like, that's stupid, right? Like, that's not what we want to do either. We don't want to.
I ended up making like an FAQ section of my website because it's almost on a daily basis now where it's like, hey, Brad, check out my new thing, and can, by the way, tweet it to your followers and do all that stuff. I know. And it's just like, it's like, I'm sure it's great. I'm sure it's something that you're really excited about. I appreciate you reaching out to me about it, but it's like, yeah, it could get really sort of dangerous if you're trying to like amplify anything that comes across your plate. And that's where, you know, you just sort of make a judgment call and let them down easy. It's like, hey, it looks great. Sorry, I'm just really busy and don't really feel comfortable, like, you know, sharing something that I'm not terribly familiar with. So, it can be a little weird at times, for sure.
Well, and you know, it's a hard balance because, right, if it's somebody who's new in the community, or even if they're established a little bit, or they've been here for a while, and they're doing stuff like reaching out to people and saying, hey, can you retweet this? Oftentimes it took them a lot to get the courage to even ask you, right? And you don't want to kill motivation. You just want to help redirect it, or say, hey, what I want to say to people is like, hey, that's not the best way of getting your goal accomplished, right? Like that's not going to work for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, what I'll typically do with people that like I respond to anyone that gets in touch with me. I mean, that's a rule that I've sort of set out for myself. I mean, if they took time out of their day, you know, it's very often it's with the best intentions in mind. I mean, I'll do my best to give a passing glance at something, but I'm not going to provide multiple rounds of design feedback and stuff like that, which, you know, I have had people in the past that are like that sort of expect that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the idea is to sort of find that balance. I'll do what I can to sort of give some general advice or, you know, provide some resources or, you know, and that's why sort of the projects I've been working on, you know, things like This Is Responsive, where it's like, hey, I'm struggling with this, and I could go, cool, here's 15 links that you could read on your specific, you know, sort of problem. And that's really nice to be able to do. So you're at least able to sort of give them some sort of guiding light, even if it's not going to, even if you're not like sort of burning up 3 hours out of your day.
Hmm. Okay. So recap, was it keep your eyes open or keep your mouth open?
Keep your ears open.
Okay.
And your bowels closed.
Your bowels closed. All right. And then when you get these spikes of inspiration, let them carry you as far as you can before real life takes over and makes you come back to reality again for a little bit. Yeah. Try and automate things the way that you were talking about things. You try to automate it as much as possible so that you can chip away at it, or you can make progress on a project without it taking you completely out of context or taking up your whole day, right?
Yeah. You want to be able to, like, for example, like I'm working on a painting right now, and I need a bunch of these Sharpie oil-based Sharpies, and I ran out of them. And so it's like I haven't touched the thing because I need to go to the art store. So it's like you want to sort of have things like ready to go so that, you know, as soon as the moment strikes where you're like, I feel like painting, or I feel like making music, or I feel like doing whatever, you could just sort of, yeah, switch over into that and sort of get right into it. Like we have a place now wherever we have sort of like a home studio, and it's basically you walk into the room, pick up an instrument and start playing, and it's there and just immediately ready to go. But whenever we are living in a little shoebox apartment in Brooklyn, the level of effort to sort of get out all the music gear from like under the bed and all that stuff, you know, prevented us from being productive, you know, as musicians. So it's like, so that's more or less what it is. It's just about sort of, you know, making sure that whatever environment you've set up for yourself to be productive is there and ready to go. And that if you're like me and are jumping in between a bunch of projects all the time, that those things are just readily accessible so that you could just sort of switch over and then hit the ground running.
All right. So the smallest barrier to entry for creativity, like least amount of effort it would take to get started again.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. I was talking in the episode with Brian LaRue. He was talking about the way that he does test-driven development. Oftentimes, he actually likes to leave a failing test when he ends a project so that when he comes back, he's motivated right away to do something as soon as he gets back to it, which I thought was awesome.
Brian's a robot.
He is. All right, so the last question then that we get to is there something that you've had to learn the hard way, or is there something that you wish that you could go back and say, hey, you're going to be in a world of pain because you're doing it this way. You might want to just kind of look at doing it another way. Like, is there any advice you would give to your past self?
I'd say the biggest thing that I would tell my past self is to be careful of sort of unscrupulous people. Okay. Generally speaking, so I'm pretty optimistic as a person, and I very much sort of, especially earlier on in my career, was just like, everybody's out to do amazing things, and you know, you could teach anybody to do anything. you know, it doesn't really matter, you know, who it is. Like, I had to hire a person, and I'm like, this is going to be great because, you know, I care so much about this stuff, and I'm sure that they're going to care as well. And then you sort of, you learn that people take shortcuts. They're out to make a quick buck instead of spending the, you know, time and energy in order to do things right, or to do things, you know, properly or honestly or whatever.
Yeah.
And that people will take advantage of your work ethic and your, you know, your motivation. Like I totally got burned and a job, I was there for a couple of years, totally getting taken advantage of because I was willing, I work hard and love what I do, and was sort of making peanuts in the process, but still, you know, working like 90 hours a week for a company that was trying to get things out the door as quickly and cheaply as possible. Without really caring about like the quality or anything like that, or the relationship. I mean, we would launch sites, and then the client would call, and the owner would hang up on the client and be like, "Well, we got their check." I mean, I'm sure we all have like a bunch of crazy stories, but yeah. I mean, like I went through a lot of learning the hard way of sort of getting taken advantage of, and then also just like having to sort of live with the you know, the results of people sort of making bad decisions and stuff like that. And that's what sort of led me continue down the path of optimism, of trying to do things right and being honest and stuff like that. It's, you know, I learned a lot about what not to do.
Yeah.
But I would have told my past self to sort of be watchful for that stuff. Right out of the gate, and those were my first couple jobs,
yeah,
of doing things quickly and cheaply and whatever. And whenever you're a kid just out of school or whatever, you don't know any better, and you're like, well, I guess this is how you need to make money or whatever. And I feel like sort of falling into that trap could be really dangerous. So yeah, so definitely watch out for people. There's always going to be people who try to take advantage of a situation or try to do something on the cheap and, you know, cheap and crappy or whatever. But it's important to rise above that.
Yeah. We were just talking about that today. I was talking with a friend and I was saying, you know what, cause we were talking about sometimes that happens in the industry and it's hard to compete with them. If you're doing freelance work and there are people who are doing things like reselling WordPress templates as if they had made them themselves, you know, that type of thing. Like it's hard to compete with that. Cause when you come in and you say, hey, I can do this project and we'll do it custom and it's going to take this long and this is how much it'll cost. And then the client goes and talks to somebody else and they're like, no, I could do it for half the price and half the time. I'll do it for you tomorrow. And it's because they're not doing things in a way that is really all that ethical, the way that they're going about it. It's hard not to want to come down to that level. And so I like the idea of rising above it.
To speak to that, like, you know, I talked about this in my Death to Bullshit talk.
Yeah.
I mean, like it's like that anywhere. I mean, there's always going to be crappy stuff out there. In fact, the vast majority of stuff is crappy and cheap and whatever. And because it's increasingly so easy to do that stuff, it's becoming sort of white noise.
Yeah.
It really is. And so companies and clients and just people in general who actually do care will be looking to rise above that white noise and to get something of quality, or they'll go through that cheap, you know, unethical crap first, get burned, and then realize, oh, okay, well, I guess in order to do good work, I need to spend a little money if I care about this stuff. It's like, you know, let the sort of crappy people play with themselves.
Yes.
Let the good people sort of work together to do good things together. So
yeah, I learned that when I was doing freelance, that I didn't want every single client, I didn't want every single job, and that there were the right designer and the right developer for that project. There are the sort of people that I didn't yep. want to work with either. And they are perfect for each other. They can
yep.
they can do each other's work all day long
and right.
keep themselves happy.
Right. And again, and even sort of coming back to like, well, how do you provide advice for those sort of people? It's like, as someone who it's like, I get project requests quite a bit, you know, can you work on my project? And you know, a lot of times it's like, maybe check out Squarespace or something like yeah. that. And yeah. and it's like, you could still provide them, you know, some value, even if you're not going to help them at all. But it's also not like, in sort of recommending, it's like, here's a tool that's pretty good. It'll do generally sort of what you need it to do, you know, especially if you're trying to get it done for cheap. That's better advice than sorry, no, goodbye.
Yeah.
And then they're going to go to some, you know, crappy agency that's going to prey on them and take, you know, $50,000 of their money
yeah.
and sort of burn it up, you know? So I do feel like there's, you know, again, sort of coming back to sort of providing people some value, even if you can't, sort of commit yourself to, you know, whatever it is they want you to do, can sort of steer them away from a lot of the bullshit that's out there.
That's fantastic. Okay. We got to wrap things up. This is a really good interview and you gave some great advice. But before we let you go, I wanted to mention for those who are listening, Brad's going to be speaking at a couple events coming up. He's going to be, at an Event Apart in Chicago. We've had a couple of guests are going to be speaking. I'm trying to think who else is in Chicago. There's somebody else that we've had on. I'll put it in the show notes. But we've had a couple people who are speaking at Event Apart. And then we've got you've got Artifact Conf coming up in September. And that has Val Head, who's going to be speaking at it as well, who's also been on the show. A couple of friends who have been at
Artifact. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of really great people there. Lots of really great sort of responsive design case studies, like how to do responsive design and with a big organization, how it affects, you know, content strategy and how you work together and stuff like that. So just it's a wonderful, wonderful conference. So highly recommend it. And I'll be doing a full day workshop there all about responsive design and other stuff.
Awesome. So go take a look at artifactconf.com and there'll be links in the show notes. But thanks so much, Brad, for joining us. Really appreciated you taking the time and sharing some of this advice that you have with us.
Yeah, hey, thanks very much, Garth. Great to finally talk to you.
Yeah, likewise. Brad is awesome. And he talked a bit about his family in the interview. And I wanted to mention something about family real quick. When we started the live episode today, my wife texted our extended family and told them to listen to the show. Afterwards, my mom texted me to say that she enjoyed the interview. And I appreciate the praise. I'd love to think that Web Friends is something that most people could find interesting or entertaining, even if they're not web professionals. But part of me also thought, she's your mom. She's supposed to love everything you do. Okay, so most likely you have people that love you unconditionally and are very supportive of what you do. Don't dismiss their support just because it comes naturally to them. These are your best friends, and you should listen to them. Speaking of support, I wanted to thank Melissa Frost for helping out with the introduction and letting us know that Brad is an extroverted robot.
Yeah, I just like plug something into his brain. Doot, 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 doot.
I also want to thank our sponsors, Symbolicons and Campaign Monitor. Good Stuff makes it possible for you to listen to the live episodes every Friday at noon Pacific on goodstuff.fm/live. Go follow WebFriendsIO on Twitter and go leave a review for the show on iTunes. Of all the supporters of the show, I want to thank you most of all for listening. You are awesome.